Reports out of Iraq these days are less about the numbers of bombs going off than the numbers going down. Violence has dropped dramatically in the country, especially in Baghdad. But the U.S. military warns that extremists maintain the ability to carry out deadly attacks. And political progress has not kept pace with military progress. Iraq's leaders have still not agreed on how to share their country's oil wealth, nor have they scheduled provincial elections. American Ambassador Ryan Crocker is at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad right now. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Ambassador. When you first took the job there back in March of 2007, violence was at its peak. How about today? Can you walk the streets today?
Yes, we can walk the streets. More importantly, Iraqis are walking the streets. This is Ramadan, and when the fast is broken in the evening, you now see families out in parks, at restaurants, at cafes. Just a striking difference from a year ago.
And is this the same outside of Baghdad as well?
By and large, it is. Perhaps the most amazing transformation in the course of the past year isn't even in Baghdad, as stunning as that has been. It's in Basra in the south, Iraq's second largest city that until this spring was really in almost the complete grip of Iranian-backed extremist Shia militias. Now the government's in charge, and security incidents there have dropped to almost zero. There are still challenges, there's no question. In the city of Mosul in the north, in the province of Diyala to the northeast, for example, there continue to be attacks. And there is no doubt in my mind that violent extremist groups, whether Iranian-backed Shia militias or Sunni militants linked to al-Qaeda and al-Qaeda itself, if they have the chance to get back in the game, they'll take it.
What do you attribute the positive changes to primarily?
Well, there are a number of factors. I think the surge is the central one because the knowledge that that gave to Iraqis that we were not only increasing our troop levels but pursuing a policy aimed at protecting the population gave them the courage to stand up against these groups on their own. So ultimately, it was the Iraqis themselves, both Sunnis and Shia, who stood up against the radical elements that were tearing the country apart. But I believe, and I was here throughout this period, that what enabled all of that was the surge.
The surge of U.S. forces. Well, if the two are so tied together, the U.S. military being present in greater numbers and the awakening councils, these groups of primarily Sunnis who are tired of the insurgents, the question, of course, is what happens as U.S. forces pull back. There's a report in today's New York Times, in fact, that suggests that some U.S. officers in Iraq believe that members of the awakening movement, Sunnis, will choose to go right back to the insurgency rather than submitting to a Shiite-dominated Iraqi government, as they are expected to do, as the process of the Awakening Councils is transferred to the Iraqi government control. How much of that is a concern of yours?
This is a time of transition, Lisa, in Iraq. And one of the elements of that transition does involve the Sons of Iraq. The Iraqi government has agreed that it will commence paying the salaries of these individuals beginning the 1st of October. That's a positive development. We can't go on forever assuming this burden. I don't think it's really a question of these individuals taking a position that they do not want to be in any way connected to the Iraqi government and would actually take up arms against it. It's almost the opposite. I think that the dominant concern is that the government will not embrace them, will not pay salaries, will not ensure their employment. The government has said very clearly in public and in private that it recognizes and appreciates what these groups have done for the country and that it will accept that responsibility.
This is a huge linchpin for you, I would imagine, as U.S. ambassador there.
Well, there are any number of linchpins out there. This is clearly one of them.
Well, have you talked to the Iraqi government and tried to dissuade it from arresting some of these tribal leaders as they have been arrested?
We have had extensive conversations at all levels from the prime minister on down. And I have to say that the Iraqi government, I think, clearly understands the importance of this. They know the difference these awakening movements have made in the security situation. and they're not about to put that at risk. I've had that conversation directly with the Prime Minister. They are talking in terms of supporting and sustaining these individuals, not of punishing them.
President Bush, I'm not sure how often you're in touch with him, but you might have read reports that he has been characterized as being disappointed and frustrated and somewhat perplexed by the lack of gratitude of the Iraqi people for the ouster of Saddam Hussein. Has he ever shared that frustration with you, Ambassador?
Well, President Bush, I think, has sustained his belief in a new Iraq and in the ability of the Iraqi people to move forward, even at the darkest of times. He has followed Iraq and led policy on Iraq intently, and certainly during the time that I've been here. What the president wants to see in Iraq is, I think, what we all want to see, which is a stable, developing, democratic Iraq. It isn't a question of gratitude. And Iraqis across the board, incidentally, are very grateful for what they perceive as our essential role in the security gains of the past year and a half. The real issue is the effort to see this country come together as it is beginning to do now.
Do you have time for one more quick question?
Sure.
Okay. In late 2002, you wrote a memo that went to then-Secretary of State Colin Powell that warned of ethnic and sectarian upheaval in Iraq if the United States were to go in. Looking back on that now, are you wishing that that your words had been adhered to and abided by?
Nice try, Lisa. Look, let me just say that I'm a career Foreign Service officer. I've been proud to serve for more than 35 years now. My job is to analyze situations, to make recommendations, but I don't make policy. And when policy is made, as a serving officer, I do my level best to carry it out. I've done so for this president, and I've been proud to do so for the other presidents I served.
Okay, Ambassador Ryan Crocker in Baghdad, thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa.